What's up? It's us, we're Harfar Tales. Welcome back to this episode that is kind of like a backstage pass, but not really a backstage pass.
This is gonna be ice cold, guys. Ice fucking cold.
Why is it cold? Why can it not be like lukewarm?
No, it can't. It's gonna be fucking bitter. Absolutely bitter. Fucking just Baltic lads.
Frosty, the frostiest of episodes. Yeah, first off, welcome back, Ryan.
Hey! I exist, yeah.
It's been like 2 months.
I know, literally been 10 weeks since I've seen you guys. It's weird.
Yeah. You're off getting cultured, and we've just been stagnating and getting more and more deep fried over here.
I don't know if cultured is the right term. More like
culture shocked.
40-cent beer in Vietnam.
That's culture.
Getting tanked.
I'm Iceman in this scenario. Just call me Bobby Drake.
No, it was great. I especially love that you said that it was going to be a cold episode because, yeah, it was like 34 degrees in Vietnam. So,
could not handle that.
No, the heat is okay when you're at the beach. It wouldn't be okay here, like just hanging out, but
yeah.
The beach, like, yeah. Yeah.
No, like, see, because one of Sarah's friends lives in Vietnam, they say, like, when it drops below like 12 degrees or something, there's like national emergency, like schools are closed because it's too cold. We're like, oh, you mean every day here?
Our norm? Yeah.
Sure. When we got off the plane here, we really thought we misheard the pilot and that he had said 16 degrees and not 6 degrees. So yeah, that was a bit of shock.
Yeah, for sure. That's anyway, cool. This preamble has gone on too long. Dylan.
Sorry that we say hello to the person who's been missing from.
Yeah, sorry, missed you too, Jim. Jesus
if you
Christ,
wanted, like... if you wanted attention, you should have been here.
Yes. So
I'm just going to talk to chat then. Hi, chat. I missed you.
So
more
what
than I missed Jim.
We're doing here is a special Q&A/talkback episode as a kind of stopgap between what we had in Whispering Ashes and of course Midwinter Tale that's coming up in 2 weeks, which is super excited, and we're definitely ready and everything is definitely edited and all the music is written and everything is happening.
Are you guys good to play that tomorrow?
I mean, or maybe I've literally got keyboards like strewn around my room while I'm desperately trying to write things.
Anyway. Ryan has been like sending me on music and I'm like, more smooth, more 80s, more synth.
Please, I've not slept.
Anyway, so what we're going to do is just going to just do a general talk back. We have a absolute shed load of questions here from all you beautiful people who have sent in questions. So I think we're going to kind of get just started going through these. But if you're with us live here, if you have questions, throw them into chat. We will get to them. If you want questions or elaboration on the stuff we're talking about, hit us with it. Sometimes it can be very easy for us to kind of just assume that we know the context of what we're talking about, but other people might not. So if you want elaboration, go for it. We are here to serve you. And the first thing we're going to serve, I've got these in no order, by the way, because that would be prep and not going to happen. The first question I have, I believe, is from Kira, and they have asked, first question being, is this world entirely your creation that was directed at me or a collab with the others? So I'm assuming this is kind of to do with Lethwon, but I mean, I think it's, well, obviously there's a lot of plagiarism involved.
tradition in D&D. Like,
standard.
You gotta have a serious amount of plagiarism.
But yeah, the majority is mine. But that said, the way I world build is very open and it kind of allows a lot of room for the guys to come in. So like, Ryan, obviously you've pretty much world built, you know, all of town, really. You're kind of the driving force behind that. So I don't know, do you want to talk anything about like town and kind of what you're kind of like, what was it like to kind of like just shoehorn like a bit of world building
into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, I suppose that's not 100% like, you know, just original either, because I think I mentioned in a few episodes that like the language that they use in town and their writing structure and the names and everything, I'm going to disappoint somebody, but I believe it's primarily based on Mesopotamian writing and like their ancient library that they had, which was like a center part of it. And like the dreamers were actually based on, I think it was ancient Roman. Man, it's been a long time. I don't have my notes in front of me. I wasn't kind of expecting it. But there was a whole big thing there of like they had people that they believed could dream about what their enemies were going to be doing. So that entire thing of the dreamers is being part of like, you know, the scholars and everything was, so I kind of just took two real world things and mashed them together and made town, you know, from there, as well as I really liked the library in Avatar: The Last Airbender. So
yeah, that was a big element.
Library.
Yeah.
When Ryan has come to me and like, it took me, cause I think at the same time that you come to me that I was also watching Avatar, and I was like, it's going to be so hard to, in my head, not just completely rip that off and just have that be the same kind of whole vibe.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was really what I was going for with it, because I just thought it was so cool, and I hated that it was only one episode, and, you know, then they didn't do much with it past that, so...
I always liked that in Korra, you could see the skeleton of the archaeologist.
Spoilers! Back there.
It's not really a spoiler. Jesus. It's just an Easter egg.
You mean he died like hundreds of years later?
Yeah. It's very fresh.
And then, yeah, like Jim has also contributed a lot to it and will contribute more. So I think Jim's wants to do a lot more with Azumakia kind of in this upcoming arc. But then, you know, obviously, like, everything to do with the guys' backstories is full them, you know? They pretty much came to me being like, oh, I want to do this, this, and this. And I kind of just took that and incorporated it into the world. So yeah, I don't know, Jim, if you want to talk in about kind of like Holy Thunder Force and Khan's backstory and, you know, what maybe you're thinking with Azumakia and how that might kind of develop.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, Holy Thunder Force was all very natural the way, like, it kind of... We were talking about Khan's backstory, you know, and that had like five or six different iterations before we landed on where it was, you know. And then just because of the beats of his backstory, that kind of led into, like, almost just gave birth to this world and story around it, you know. Especially like taking in stuff like what the oath means to these soldiers and how that would, you know, affect how they build themselves up as a unit. So like, they're defenders, so yeah, they're in passes defending and stuff like that, you know. I mean, it's all very natural coming from just the story that we had for him, you know. Whereas Azumakia, looking forward, we're being a lot more deliberate about it, I think, in saying like, okay, well, we're starting with, here's a landmass. Here's the little bit of history you've told me about it for Bren's backstory, you know? And then it's like building out this political landscape and then looking at, like, you know, basic world building stuff. Like, so these guys live in, you know, what would you call them? Trenches, canyons, chasms.
Yeah. Chasms, canyons.
So like, how does life change because you live in a chasm, you know? So as much as we haven't gotten into it as much yet as we would have Khan's, but I've got lots of fun ideas and I can't wait to kind of sink my teeth into the, like, us working to make Azumakia something cool.
Yeah, nice.
And working really, really hard to make sure it's not just ripping on the Shattered Plains from
I think that will be very different.
But what I really like is the whole, like, the culture. I don't want to say too much because I don't know how much you want, but like the culture that it's built around and the history of it and everything that entails could lead to some fiery kind of cultural stuff.
Interesting.
I like that Dredd has said that Khan's northern accent was one of the best she's heard there. So.
Is that right? I haven't played him in so long. I feel like my Khan accent is starting to slip a bit. Nah, he's still here.
Not dead yet.
I've always maintained, and Dylan will probably back me up on this, but I'm going to be one of those old men who for no reason adopts a Belfast accent.
Just for the air of mystery that it's going to give you.
Just because I feel like some old Irish men just do that. Like, they're just like, all right, I'm 64. I have a Belfast accent.
I don't think I've met those men, but I'll take your word for it.
I have. There's a few elder Tuhis out there who have a bit of a Belfast accent for no good reason.
Following on from that question, I've got a question here about that's very kind of to the point. Why is town so secluded? So I think this.
I don't know how much I can talk about that yet.
I think it's probably not something that's going to naturally come up in the podcast because I think it probably a lot of people, okay. a lot of the characters would like. Know it more, you know, more or less, so they're probably not going to ask questions about it. So yeah, you can kind of talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, so when I came to Dylan with the idea of town, one of the big things that I said that I wanted to be really, really important with it is that it was completely neutral when it came to like any of the wars or anything like that. Just an entirely neutral place, and I wanted it to be that both sides, like if there was like a war going on, that both sides saw it as a resource but respected the idea that you don't attack, you don't try and take over town, you don't, it's just a source of knowledge, and that, you know, they don't adopt any of the currencies from any of the surrounding areas, anything like that. It's just a completely neutral area, and that is what is respected. And I said that was kind of the core tenet of what I wanted with it. So Dylan, you know, with this huge political landscape he'd structured, it was like, okay, well, we need to make this make sense geographically as well. So it can't be in a place that is, you know,
strategically rich
in, yeah, rich in resources or anything. And the other thing as well is that I wanted that library to be built into a mountain. You know, again, going with like some of the ancient structures, you know, you've seen one of the seven wonders of the world, you know, the big temple built into the mountains. And I wanted it to have that kind of feel with it. And so all of that together just makes it have to be isolated to be able to work without being somewhere that strategically the, you know, any army would want to take over, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that aspect of world building where it's like, you know, okay, I have this. What are the repercussions of this? What are the implications of this? And, you know, what's going to naturally come along? And then I love, especially with town, where it's something that's like very, very like not the real world. I mean, like if this was the real world, because that's the Great Library of Alexandria, it would be burnt because people have, you know, and so it's like
they get their knowledge and then burn down, you know.
This is it, you know, it would be raised and pillaged, but like it's like, okay, so what cool ideas can we have to ensure that kind of peace? And something that I don't think has come up in the podcast much has been the fact that, you know, each nation, or you know, former nation before it was all unified under the Hootsman, would have sent people there as a kind of, not quite as tribute, but a kind of like, almost like vassals to be like, okay, you go learn from here. And also, you know, we'll send people who are not just for like political reasons, but actually like, oh, you're going to go study in town. And, just you know, there's like
a kind of thing.
Yeah, it was like, oh, or it was also kind of case of like, oh, we need to build a new aqueduct. We are going to hire the engineers from town to come out and do that for us. And that's how town earns their money and earns their keep as well.
Yeah. And it's kind of funny, you know, early on in the podcast, I think I make a mention of like Bush having a town accent. And it was after that episode that you and I like actually got to talking about it. I think we were just out for drinks or something like that and got to talking about it. And we're like, it actually doesn't make sense for town to have an accent. because people would be sent from all over. It should be more like, you know, some, I'm missing the word, but like a big city type thing where there's not
like a
really
melting
melting pot of it. It's not one big defined.
Yeah, it's like metropolitan versus such a small commune.
Everybody just talks like Schmidt from New Girl.
Yeah, and it's almost like, you know, there's a big joke about how when people go to Trinity, they adopt a different accent. And I started seeing it that way, that Sid's got an accent that he, you know, almost like that kid that sees a movie and then bases his entire personality off of it. Like, you know, Sid has seen different bands or things like that and decided to base his entire accent and personality and who he is off of that, as opposed to just having his mother's accent or Herman's accent.
I think I don't know if I've outwardly canonically said this, but Bush's accent and kind of the accent that Sid uses should be from the Isles of Sylvia.
I think you mentioned that at one point.
And they're kind of like somewhat like they're all islands. So it's like it kind of like that kind of surfer vibe.
I was about to say, to give that a surfer accent is incredible.
I've got two questions that I'm going to answer at the same time because they are big, big spoiler territory, but I just want to acknowledge them. I think this is Silkira. They want to know more about Hootsworth coming to be such a prominent force, and where did Ray Ray come from? As in Ray Kara, the guardian of town. Listen
totally
to find out.
Listen
to find out.
Laugh
yeah, that is, they are way big spoilers and going to be big plot points.
But where did Ray Ray come from? Our hearts.
Yes, that's
well. That's a perfect time to introduce
the map.
Why did you have that?
Fuck. You know, people like
we have a reputation, Ryan. We had a good one, and then you have.
Even the listeners know it's not in jest anymore.
Once. One episode, that's a joke. Two episodes, that's a recurring gag or recurring bit. This is taking the absolute piss.
This is now thematic. This is the theme of the podcast now.
We went to a maid cafe in Japan, in Akihabara.
You know what?
They came up to Joanne.
You to stop speaking.
They asked Joanne,
I'm going to direct this to you.
Would you please turn down his levels?
I'll try.
Go on.
This one's kind of half about Bren. Are tieflings? I'm actually kind of going to come. I have another kind of question that from Becca that kind of combines these two. It is a tiefling.
I could see it coming from Becca. All right.
One is, with the introduction of Bren, can we expect to see more tieflings? And how are tieflings viewed in this world? The use of the ring suggests not well, so I'm curious about that. So Jim, I'll kind of let you
I can answer this from Bren's point of view. Now, unless you've got some kind of tiefling euphoria. Hold on, let me just get in.
I mean, I will chime in on the kind of the greater world perspective.
The thing about Bren is, right? He's been hiding for a long time. because the world has mistreated him, you know, because of how he looks. And the fact that he's kind of like got infernal heritage or whatever is, I don't know if we, I can't remember if it's gone live or if we've talked about it on the podcast yet. I'll dance around it, but like he's kind of unique. In everything I know so far, is in that there's no other tieflings. They're like insanely rare in Letuan. It wouldn't be like Forbidden Realms or whatever that you know, like every second character is a fucking tiefling at this point. That's just me playing Act of Baldur's Gate. Everyone is a fucking tiefling. So Bren is kind of unique, and because of that, he's received, you know, the odd glance, the odd sword chucked his way. And then because of everything that happened in Azumakia as well, like, because he's such a unique thing and has such an infernal visage, he even then, you know, has been, like, what would you say, devilified, demonized, and turned into almost... devilized, yeah. He got devilized and turned almost into, like, folklore, you know? Like, the devil of the streets is something that... Sorry, just looking at Love, Murder, Rose. If they don't want people to play the tieflings, then why tiefling hot? Right? Right?
Yeah, tieflings are pretty hot, to be fair.
Yeah, well, they can only ever be second to dwarves. But, I mean, it's a noble second.
True.
But, yeah, no, I mean, long story short, no, not common. Like, but then you get people like Cid who are like, oh, you're a cutie. You know, so I think
Cid's also hung around with Blake, so
he's had a bit of a raw deal since his birth, you know. So I wouldn't say they're common, and I wouldn't say they're accepted in society just yet.
Yeah, I'll kind of expand on that a little bit. So obviously the big things about tieflings and Asimar or Asimar, whatever you want to pronounce it, is that they are, you know, there's heritage in their bloodlines from realms outside of the primordial plane, right? So from like the celestial, from celestial beings or infernal beings and stuff like that. And
can't remember if we touched that in the podcast or not. I was trying to dance around all that stuff.
I don't think we have. So this is kind of like, I guess this is like special inside knowledge for checking this episode out. But really, it's not really a spoiler because this is intuitive and we've kind of said as much in the past on the podcast where, you know, other planes of existence are incredibly hard to get to. It was, you know, I tried to make a very specific point when you guys went to the elemental planes.
It's like the stuff of legend.
This is totally unheard of, you know, like this doesn't happen, is very, very rare. So then for people to go to these other planes and have interactions from other planes, for them to intermingle and like pass down bloodlines is even much, much, much rarer. I won't say too much more than that because that's kind of getting into Bren backstory, which not even Ryan knows.
We haven't touched it all yet.
But yeah, so basically, to answer the question, the original question, tieflings super, super rare. I won't go as far as to say there's no others, but they are.
We haven't encountered any yet.
No, you haven't.
Right, and I don't think we've met anyone who's encountered any yet. Especially because Bren, we might have, but Bren is always disguised, so it's not like somebody would be like, oh, hey, you're one of those things from Cork, you know?
Yeah, exactly. The term tiefling would maybe exist in a theoretical term somewhere in town. Like, Cid has maybe come across that in his, like, 6 months of study, but, like, you know, it's not a known phenomenon.
Yeah.
Basically. Here's a question for all the table. What is your favorite episode of Harfar Tales that you've recorded thus far? And this is from Corey. Corey Lansdell. And he also asks, do you miss me? Which I'll get into after. Of course we miss you, Corey.
Of course.
Corey, we miss you so much.
Yeah.
Can we answer at the same time, Ryan?
Ooh. Now... HFT, are we doing
everything?
Everything.
Everything.
Yeah. You know the answer.
Well, go on, Jim, you clearly have a...
Okay.
Go on,
Just on three.
No, I'm interested in yours more than...
Hit us with this, Jim.
My answer is a meme answer. I thought it would be funny if we all said it together. But date episode for sure.
Oh, no! No one likes the date episode.
I love the date episode.
The date episode was very fun. I don't think it's my favorite episode that we've recorded.
No, probably not.
I don't know. I couldn't pick a favorite. I saw that question come in and I'm like, fuck if I know. I mean, maybe I think the Battle of Stone's Reach, though, I'm going to say those two episodes. Yeah. Because, like, one, like, the story developments, two, like, Ryan's sound design on them, all the music, three, just how into the role playing stuff we all were in that episode.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, that was fun. The Bellicor episode was great payoff. It's also my favorite music I've ever written. Episode two of Whispering Ashes 1, when you all start to realize you're not real. That I loved that. That was, as someone writing a story, that was probably my favorite thing I've done there.
See, I could also say Whispering Ashes, just because how fun that was, to, especially like how fun it is episode, to role Jim. Play that kind of. Yeah, well, actually, I'm not.
Fair, I can't stop you.
I'm in another county. No, I'm not. Fuck, you're close. To role play two people kind of fighting for control of a consciousness, almost. That was really cool.
Patrick actually has a comment there that actually makes a good point. It seems like all the ones that we're saying are the ones with twists, because he says, what an amazing twist. And all the ones that, you know, have like these crazy twists in them seem to be what our favorite things were. And I think it's because those are the times where each of us as players, you know, like, are so caught off guard and are and love what, you know, the DM has done in that regard, you know, and things like that. So
I think I would probably say the Battle for Stone's Reach is my favorite episode that we've done. It was the culmination of so many things coming together. You know, I thought it was a very, you know, not to toot my own horn, but I thought it was a very, very interesting combat. I thought it was a really, really good episode for storytelling true combat, which is something that doesn't happen that often. Or it's harder to do in D&D because it becomes so much of a, well, this ability and this, and like, you know, the whole like Sid awakening his dreamer powers in that episode, like because of a throwaway thing that you did two episodes ago where you were like, I don't want to sleep, I just want to keep going, and things like that.
And then it paid off,
and I was able to incorporate it then. I was like, oh yeah, of course, you know, Maynard's gonna be able to bring this in and like talk, you know, kind of taunt him with this. You know, we kind of had all of these storylines converging with like Axel coming back into it, and stuff, and then like, you know, obviously the whole like con like sacrifice element, like was like it was just the it was definitely some of the Stone's it was some of the best D&D we've ever played, hard. I think. But I will also say that I think Whispering Ashes 1 was very, very, you know, is kind of up there because it was the first time, you know, it wasn't me D&Ding on the podcast or me DMing on the podcast. And so it was kind of like, oh, this is also new. This is such like a new thing. And we weren't used to doing horror. And we like, you know, and then, you know, then all the kind of the twists and things that were there as well was,
yeah, we didn't know what to expect from.
It's so funny because a lot of people have talked about like what was like scary and stuff like that. And you know, that Whispering Ashes 2 was a scarier concept, but I think we'll never be able to capture again the way you guys did not expect where I was going to go with horror. You know, now you all know.
Now the expectation has been set.
Yeah. Where that first time it was like, whoa, you know? So, like,
for sure.
As, like that scene with Iris, like at the beginning, like, you know, I'll never be able to catch you guys off guard like that. You know,
100%,
for sure.
Yeah,
I think you will. I think you're gonna catch us off guard again.
I was talking in the Discord there earlier. Like, honestly, for Whispering Ashes 3, if it's not that you've bugged our houses and are going to arrange for like a slasher serial killer to come in and actively try to murder us and just release that as fan footage, then to be honest,
I think he's gone deeper, your commitment
to the podcast if you don't go that far.
I think he's gone deeper than that. Like, the other day I was sitting there watching a film with Colette and I was just looking at her and I was like, is she a paid actor? You know?
From the beginning.
Yeah.
From 10 years ago.
No, Matt is the paid actor. You got
That's the real horror. You swapped out my child.
Oh my God. Wow. Wow.
I wouldn't put it past him. I wouldn't. Like, and I'm like, what was he doing in Asia? You know?
Yes.
Well, it's so funny because the first picture I sent you guys from, well, no, I sent you, I first was annoying you guys by only sending you pictures of bathrooms. But
yeah, we were like, you've been in Asia like 3 days, Ryan. Like, tell us what's going on, send me things. Yeah. And he sent us like poorly cropped photos of like him walking to the bathroom and like a plate of food,
not even a shot out the window. Stuff. Yeah.
Like, I was like purposely making sure you guys couldn't see any windows or anything
could
outside.
Could be a holiday in Tala.
So.
Oh, God.
Anyway, speaking of Whispering Ashes and kind of other system or, you know, other kind of many things that we've done, Becca is asking, are there any other systems you guys would like to play around with in the future for one-shots?
Ooh, can I spoil something for 2024?
Absolutely.
I am currently writing a story using the Avatar The Last Airbender system. And we're going to do something coinciding with the launch of the live-action show. I'm doing a bit of a story. There's a lot of prep that we've got to get in place for that, but something to be excited for February 2024.
I'm very excited.
Yeah. We, of course, then also have in 2 weeks' time for Midwinter Tale, we're playing Kids on Bikes.
Yeah. Oh, true. That hasn't come out
very
yet.
Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. We recorded that like 4 months ago.
Weird.
Yeah. And then I have my eyes on Scion. I've only played Scion the first edition, but I'll probably be playing the second edition, I would say.
Scion is like the godly one, right?
Yeah,
where
so basically
like absolute gods.
You're kind of I can't remember the ins and outs of it. So you're either a demigod or like you're the avatar of a god on like in like modern day.
It's real Percy Jackson.
I was gonna ask, is that like real Percy Jackson type.
Yeah, kind of, but everything is about being as over the top as possible. So literally baked into the mechanics are, for want of a better word, cool dice. So based on how well you describe what you're doing and how over the top it is, you get bonuses to your dice rolls. So you'll get to roll more dice the cooler the thing you're doing is.
It's kind of like a more upbeat version of the stress dice.
Yeah,
that's what I was wondering.
It's not too dissimilar to that, because it's like on a 7+ is a success on a D10. So obviously the more dice you roll, the more chance you have of succeeding. And so the plan for that is to actually do, and this answers another question that Keir had, is what are Dragon Force up to at the moment? I am planning a kind of side story kind of similar to Khan's prologue of kind of doing some more stories in the history of Lethwon, which I'm going to call like the Legends of Lethwon series, and that's going to be Legends of Lethwon Dragon Force, where the guys
I hate that
Dragon
it's in
Force.
The history, because then I can't just like jump off a cliff.
That's precisely why it's in the history, Ryan.
Sorry, can I interject very, very quickly to say, Ben Percival, you are an absolute legend. Absolute legend.
Okay.
And also, I glossed over it earlier. Yes, Corey, I do miss you. I miss you, and I miss Jesse, and I miss Zoe. I'm sad. Anyway, go on. Yeah, Dragon Force are a bunch of fucking pricks.
So
I want a Legends of Lethwon about Sid's mom too.
Just saw that. That'd be great.
Yeah, please? I didn't. What? Hey, yeah, I want that.
She's a legend. Dreamers back. just to be so uncouth about it.
What?
Jesus Christ.
Boo!
You're not invited to play Avatar The Last Airbender.
No.
I want to play a non-bender. I want to have a boomerang. I just got to play Sokka, I think.
No, you get to be a cabbage.
That's one with Aisling that's entirely in a dream. That'd be class.
I like that idea, Jim, and I might steal it.
Good.
Well, not spoilers, but totally within a different realm like that would be very. I can't spoil some.
Okay. Okay. Here is one that a lot of people have asked us, both kind of in the submission for these questions and offline and in person and stuff like that. It's the big one. Is there any chance of Khan coming back?
I hope not. Hated that guy. I'm just kidding.
And kind of tied into this, I think someone asked, I think you've talked about it before as well, Ryan, about kind of like Sid's perspective on it too, and how Sid kind of views it as like a natural part of life. So kind of once the initial like revivify wasn't an option, that kind of Sid, you know, has come to terms with it.
Sid's having a hard time. Sid, I wasn't sure how I was going to play it. And if you've learned anything about me from Whispering Ashes or from stuff I've said on the podcast, I really like to do a lot of research on things. So I actually, I was telling Dylan, I actually downloaded some books about dealing with like witnessing like soldiers that have witnessed their friends die or have killed someone and how they've dealt with that grief. And one of the big things that I'm going to be bringing into this is, you know, there's been a little bit already that he said about his utter anger toward the Hoots Force. But it's going to be basically on kind of a, you know, almost like a suicidal spree, like totally, you know how he used to like pull back a lot and be so worried about taking care of Fink. I'm going to have him kind of be the opposite of that, of being very willing to put himself in danger if it means killing Hoots Force.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I think I ruined Sid.
I mean. Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
I think.
Sid's had a hard time of it, you know.
I think from a, it is Khan ever going to come back? I'll never say never. I do think that had I really hope everyone in chat is up to date. Spoilers. But I think had Khan died when ye were level 12, 13 or something, and like Khan was a big I want to say player on a national scale, like everyone knew him, he was like incredibly important and stuff. It would not be out of place in the genre of D&D and high fantasy to be like, okay, well, Jim plays a backup character for three episodes while Sid and, you know, Melody go on a quest to resurrect him, you know? Yeah, and I think that would have been completely kind of on brand.
Oh yeah, but yeah.
Yeah, but
I think at level 12 though, right? And this is something I said to Dylan when we were talking about this amongst ourselves once, is that like to put where I am on it, is I'm very much on the, I think it would cheapen it if he came back. You know, I don't want him to come back. I really like his arc. But
you really like him dead.
Yeah. I have a little picture of him dead.
He took the sexy con picture.
Well, that's why the first Patreon t-shirt is going to be that failed con save shirt.
So yeah, shit. Has everyone seen the Patreon t-shirt? It's grim. No, what was I saying? Like at level 12, right? You're at a very high power level, And also in D&D, like when you die, like there's a documented place you go. It's another plane of existence, you know? It's not like we don't know what happens. It's like, oh, well, he's over there. You know, he's doing yeah. things on that plane. We just can't reach him. And I would like that barrier to be the tenuous barrier that's there, but let it still be as much a barrier as it is in real life, you know? Yeah, look, he's probably out there on the golden plains of whatever afterlife exists in this.
Oh, yeah. Realm, I suppose the way Dylan's built this world, though, by being very low magic.
Yeah.
You know, like, does that plane exist? You know, how much are we in actual D&D?
Can I metagame and say that I'm gonna guess it does exist because Bren exists?
I'm gonna guess it doesn't because I don't believe in the gods. So
yeah, that's fair. Quantifiably yeah. wrong.
Jim, your guess or your kind of like meta guess is correct. Like it does exist. There is like Mount Celestia and all that kind of like, you know, there is a typical kind of D&D cosmology in that one. It is just restricted, you know, just those kind of interplays are not there as much. So it is a lot harder. And so that's why I'm saying never say never, but probably never.
He's probably got a new,
Probably met
back up with his wife and everything. Well,
we don't even know if she's dead.
Marianne,
He's met up with Dakiris, though. He's like he's probably met up with the rest of Holy Thunder Force.
He probably has, yeah.
Which is a little something I do have in my noggin knocking around for maybe.
That's something we have discussed that, like where what he would be doing.
Yeah, I don't think my throat can do Dakiris again, so.
Well, tough.
Yeah, well, you should have thought of that before you fucking... I do want to, okay, I know this is asked a lot, and we've dwelled on it a bit here, but, like, I think I like Khan's arc. I like Khan's story. I think narratively it's very fulfilling when you see it from, like, weedy little Khan at the beginning right through to, you know... flat con under all the stones. It's a nice kind of arc. You know, there's nice duality. Like to quote George Lucas, it's like poetry. It rhymes. I don't know how much more story you could give to Con without it cheapening it. You know.
Yeah.
And if he ever did come back, it would have to be very tangential, I think, or very brief.
Yes.
I think the main thing is that Khan now gets to be with his favorite member of his
Bolo. Bolo.
I'd like to think he's riding Mercedes around up there as well. What were we saying till the other day? We'd love to do a what if, like a what if series.
Oh yeah, something that would be so cool.
One of the ones like I suggested is. What if Bolo was the last surviving member of Holy Thunder Force instead? And you like, how fucked up would Lethemon be?
Sid would just go, "Ah, no, I'm going home." He meets up with this weird guy at the Battle of the Bands. He goes, "Ah, no, I'll just do this on my own."
You know what? This is a very silly Battle of the Bands. I'm going home.
Ryan and Jim, this question is directly for both of you. Okay. Well, I guess it's probably for everyone because I've also been a player. I just don't consider myself a player that much. How did you come up with the names for your characters? And I kind of feel that this is mainly towards Sid and Khan, but I mean, if there's kind of anything else, any other kind of good naming suggestions or naming kind of stories?
I think we should talk about like Sid and Khan first, and then Whispering Ashes 1 has kind of an interesting hook there as well.
Yes. Yeah.
So I don't know. Ryan, do you want to go first for Lethemon?
Yeah, I mean, mine's very easy. When Dylan pitched the idea of, you know, this being a very music-based thing, and you know, the idea of characters and things being based off of actual, you know, people and stuff like that, you know, actual bands and stuff. I decided I really wanted to be a very big stereotype of like that that 80s, you know, California, yeah. you know, punk kid. And I know it's not Californian, but Sid is based off of Sid Vicious and the Rat Fink. So like,
that's two Finks in one shot.
Yeah. Hilariously, so many people are like, oh, Fink, that's a funny name for a rat. And I'm like, the Rat Fink. But yeah. apparently that's
not... that just didn't make it out of
America, we didn't know so. We didn't know what that was when you
yeah, I was just like, okay, Fink, sure. I can see that as a rat's
and
name.
So yeah, I looked up all these, you know, and showed them all these pictures. Like, I was like, no, like Sid Vicious and the Rat Fink.
Yeah. And we're like,
oh, yeah. We had no clue. Sure.
But it's funny because now Jim and Dylan have bought me all these Rat Fink things.
Yeah, he's a very easy person to buy presents for now.
it's made it very easy.
Yeah. So, but yeah, that's where that comes from.
Con is a story of two halves. The first one is I wanted a name that was suitably kind of fantasy and paladin-y, so warrior kind of thing. So I just said Con. And Greystone, I have a habit of naming fantasy characters after locations in Ireland. So like, historically, I've had like Avoca, the necromancer, Rathfarnham, the paladin, like, you know, Irish names just Vincent lend themselves Blackrock, to
Blackrock, of course.
Yeah, Vinton Blackrock. So I just did that, really. More interestingly, like Dylan, when we were talking about Bren, like we went in on Bren's name.
So many ideas. Like,
2 or 3 days of just throwing names at the wall to see what stuck, like, and like we were going in on like the etymology. At one point, he was going to be called something else for a very long time.
Duke Achilles, yeah,
were the other two that he was going to be for a very, very long time. And then we were like, for some reason, like, nothing to do with his character anymore. We were like, oh, he should be named after like a navigator, like Brendan the Navigator. And I was like, Bren, it's perfect. Nothing to do with his character anymore. He even has a second name that I can't remember. It's Bren Skellige.
Oh, yeah, Skellige.
Because the Skellige Islands are Brendan the Navigator. It's like, doesn't have anything amazing to do with him. Like, exercise in futility.
And then for Whispering Ashes 1, because I don't think any of the other ones have any kind of interesting stories behind names before.
I would say no does. Midwinter Tales.
Oh, sorry, yeah, of course, go on, get your other American reference that none of us know.
I actually, can I say, very much like Yukon and Hermy are two of my favorite D&D characters I've ever seen. I love them so much. Like, just seeing them, like, fills my heart with joy. I love them so much.
Being a werewolf was very fun as well.
Yeah, that was good.
The unnecessary fucking reveal.
I know, it's just so goofy.
Double bluff your character.
Yeah. To me, who's your fellow player? You're fucking over to DM. It's just like Ryan, well done.
Conspiring with me, and I was like, okay, but why?
They're asking who Brendan the Navigator is, and I just didn't say anything because I didn't know either. But now that someone else doesn't know, then
Brendan the Navigator is the patron saint of navigators, and he was like, but what he actually was an Irish sailor. And he's like an Irishman who sailed all over the world and had like cool adventures and stuff. And then Christianity was like giz, patron saint. But yeah,
more Catholicism is weird, man.
Oh yeah, you do something cool. Now it's part of Catholicism.
Whispering Ashes 1. Then Ryan came to us and was basically like, "Oh, please make for me the most generic fantasy characters you possibly can."
Yeah.
And so he's like, doesn't matter what it is, they just need to be like, you know, the characters, he said the characters themselves can be kind of somewhat, I don't even think he said
like the build could be interesting, but the
concept
had to be vanilla AF, just out of the box fantasy characters.
So I was like, okay, can I be like, fucking just a real over-the-top zealous cleric. And he was like, yeah, perfect. And I was like, okay, cool. And then I started looking at cleric builds, and I was like, I really like the light cleric because I think it was really, really interesting. Had a lot of cool mechanics.
When you were a light cleric, I was like, yes.
Honestly, such a coincidence.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, well, green is the Irish for sun. I will just drop the gu and call myself Rian. Tends to how I name all my characters. Well, a lot of my characters, especially for NPCs, is just like, what's their name in a different language of a element of their personality or backstory,
which is such a fun way to
translate it a couple of different languages, and then kind of to get an inspiration of how it might sound, which is why, like, I think Azumakia is something is translated to Eastern Empire and things like that, because it's in the east, and the Tuahan Empire is Natua because it's to the, you know, yeah, north. Like, so like a lot of my stuff is just like that.
Now what about Shuri, you know?
I spent a long time thinking about that one, and then I just thought to myself, left quarter circle, left punch, and it came to me.
Sure you can.
I spun around an awful lot on that name. What was really funny is too. Someone in the Discord, the Irish GTRPG Discord, was like, sure you can. That's just like a joke name you'd give a D&D character. And we were all like,
ah, ha, precisely what I was.
Whispering Ashes 2, it was very funny because I didn't want to spoil something from the very end. Yeah. To them,
and yeah, maybe players. Let's tread a little lightly on this one because this is only recently.
So I won't say exactly what it is or anything. But Jim came to me with his character's name, and he was like, "Oh, and his last name is this." I was like, "Oh, you mean his middle name is that?" He's like, "No, his last name." I'm like, "Nah, because he's got another last name."
I just love that you just assumed we wouldn't come up with particularly in a modern, you gave us a modern setting,
and you're like,
and then you were like, you know, this with our last names and this whole backstory, and I was like, but no. It's so funny because looking back now, I could have just had her take Michael's name.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, I like it. It worked out well. It actually worked out.
Yeah.
Can we do a sneak peek and give away the names of your characters for Midwinter 2?
Oh yeah, totally.
Oh yeah, that's fun. Yeah. What's my name? No, I actually don't.
You're Randall.
Yeah, no, I Randall. Remember Randall. Randall? Yeah. I don't remember Ryan's name though.
Brittany,
yeah.
Brittany and Randall Radcliffe. Radcliffe, because it has the word rad in it.
Those are my initials. Hey.
Yeah, your initials, yeah.
Brittany was, it's set in the, I don't know. How much am I allowed to say?
I think Jim kind of
said it earlier. Yeah, I think I said it before. Yeah,
we're probably going to start promoting it like next week.
Yeah. Here's a quick synopsis of it. It's kids on bikes. It's much, much lighter than most things we've done before. And it's set in the 80s in a small town called Pine Ridge Reek.
Yeah. Creek. I know Becca, for example, loves like really roleplay heavy stuff. You're going to love Midwinter's Tale.
It's like 80-90% roleplay.
Yeah.
Compared to our usual like 50-50 balance or whatever, you know?
Yeah. 100%. Yeah, and so Brittany just got the name from, just typical American, you know, 80s girl. Very popular name in the 80s. And I'm so embarrassed listening back because I spent a long time like watching like voice coach videos and things to do a girl's voice very well. But man, as each episode, I start out very well. And as it goes, my voice just gets tired and I just lose it.
This is the problem, Ryan. Never try.
Becca wants to know, can we get a sneak peek of the character voices?
No, not right now.
No.
It takes me a long time to get into it because
I honestly can't remember it. That's fair. I would need to hear it again to do it in any way justice.
I think the main thing about Mid-Major 2 is more Marco.
Tell you what, we will can we like drop a sneak peek of like our character introductions or something into the Discord at some point over the next couple of days for people?
That's exactly what we'll do.
We'll
in
do that.
Intro, I'll clip a bit of it.
Yeah.
Just put that intro in there.
Orange Boy. Oh, that's Kylo. Yeah, we'll just drop that. Ryan wrote the intro music and it's incredible. Yeah, I was like, I wanted to have the energy of the National Aerobics Championship and you just nailed it.
So funny. I spent so long just sitting there staring at my computer, like going through different synth like things and just being like, I don't know how to write stuff. I don't know how music works. And then I just moved to drums and I was like hitting different drum effects. And I hit that bass drum that I used. And I was like, oh shit. Oh yeah, I'll hit this snare here. And then I switched back to the synth and I was like, bap, 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 bap. And I was like, okay, there we go. Wrote it in like 20 minutes.
We are, we're kind of coming towards the end in a bit. Still,
I miss you guys. Probably
questions. But just going to shout out to Twitch chat. If you guys have any questions, are kind of it's beginning to run low on questions now. So if you have any questions you want to ask, they don't have to be hardcore related. You can ask us whatever you want. We will answer them. But this is a question for us all. If we call the past to when the podcast is starting and give ourselves some advice, what would it be?
Preamps work differently than you think.
Yeah, I would say, I don't know. So much advice to do it all differently. I don't know. That's a tough one.
I don't know if I would do. There's a lot of small technical stuff that I would do differently for sure.
Yeah.
It's like, all tech stuff that I feel like I would.
Yeah. Like we've got obviously our sound quality and stuff has upgraded a significant amount kind of over the, you know, the nearly 2 years that we've been doing this. So there's a lot of kind of stuff like that where we'd be like, oh yeah, when you're starting off, just spend $3,000 on equipment. We'd be like, okay, yeah, we'll do that. And then we get told to feck off by our past selves. But I mean, there'd be simple things that we could probably do to learn that. I think, again, on the kind of production side, I would say start with video, figure out how to do that.
See, it's so funny though, because we wanted to at the beginning as well. And a lot of it just had to do with time and money and things like that as well.
Time, money, resources.
Logistics,
the space and stuff, because we were in your kitchen, in your...
Oh yeah, 100%. And I mean, that's the thing about the tech part too, is like, I didn't have, you know, the studio to work in, you know, at that point. Like, so it's like, no matter what advice we would give in that regard, it's not like we could really do it.
I think on that note, like advice, actionable advice, I'd give past Jim anyway. I don't know as much as you guys, but don't be so strung up on where you see things going in your head. Because the story is better if you just let it flow naturally. Because I'd be very much like, I need this to happen in this episode, or I want this to happen. And sometimes that would detract from great things that could have happened, you know, if I had just yes-anded the situation. So like, loosen to fuck up with storytelling, and especially role-playing as well. Like, I was very hesitant at the beginning to commit into role-playing that much, you know?
Yeah, I think... I think that's a very big one. I think if you look to the first 7 episodes we did, like episodes 1 to 7 of Leth One, it's very much I've put you on rails and I've got this interesting Battle of the Bands thing to get through and you just do it. And that's kind of
needed that at the beginning though, to get the story rolling, you know?
It did, and I'm not saying I wouldn't do something similar to that, but I definitely did it like that also from a place of like insecurity as a DM, where I don't think I was maybe good enough to really kind of like roll with the punches half as much. And I've now kind of moved way more into a prep situations, not you know, as you said, Jim, not things that a linear have to happen and stuff. Yeah. It's just like I've got, especially because the way I write is I've got like, I tend to have kind of big story moments that are in my head that I tend to write towards to be like, oh, it'd be so cool if this happened, this happened, this happened. And then very quickly from playing with you guys a lot, I was like, oh, there's probably very little chance of this happening. And I've kind of just been very much like, okay, just go with it. Just put the world in front of the players with a strong enough hook so that they're, you know, bought into it and know what they're doing. But how they go about everything needs to completely be up to them. And I think, you know, I would kind of just tell myself to trust myself a little bit more in that, you know, I can do it, basically. So, yeah.
That's fair. Yeah, I mean, when I go back and listen to episode one, because at some point when there are 72 hours in a day, I will, you know, like remaster episode one and two. And when I go back and listen to those, like Jim, you and I sound nervous. Like,
oh yeah.
Like, and it's so funny listening now because we're not nervous at all when we're doing it, you know, but we sound so nervous. Yeah.
Well, we probably suffer for that as well. Like, because we were so focused on doing well then, and now we're like, yeah, fucking cat girls, frogs. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think it works well with our live show, you know, and everything, not being nervous and stuff. Like, man, start now. I mean, we could have never done a live show. Like,
no. Like, no. Not the way we do them now. Like,
Okay. Let me just kind of flick through my.
Somebody asked what our favorite color was. I saw that in the list of things that came through Instagram.
Oh yeah, used to be blue, but now it's green.
Mine's green too. Yeah. Nice.
Mine is black.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, I know. Bitch. I'm so edgy.
So edgy. We know you're lying, and your favorite color is purple.
Yeah,
look at all the green behind him.
Black
too.
And purple. Yeah, yeah. That's my LARP stuff. It doesn't count.
Custom tailored green LARP kit.
Yeah, whatever.
You say anyone from
don't say all it.
It says our audio is gone. That's what Dredge is.
I don't know how that could happen. Ryan, give me some speaking.
Hello, I'm talking.
Oh, okay. They can hear us again now.
Oh, gee, now. Okay, don't know.
Okay, that was weird.
How strange.
Yeah. Did you just hear my rant about famous people and how I hate them all?
No,
I hope you didn't. It wasn't good. Don't do it again.
It's going to be under recording, so.
I have my answer. Do you have yours, Jim?
Yeah.
Go on.
Go for it.
William Shakespeare.
I mean, that's a good
I want to play a campaign DM'd by William Shakespeare. The man who the universe has accepted is the bard.
Yeah, wait.
Me. I want to play
actual
this game.
William Shakespeare, or who they think is the woman that actually wrote his stuff.
Whoever wrote the books, get off your high horse. I don't give a fuck.
Hey, man. I'm just saying.
Look, just give Jim the Willy Shakes, okay? That's all you want. Just,
yeah.
Would be, I would like to have as another player, Charlie Chaplin. I think he's such an incredible entertainer.
The silent movie star?
And no, he's
although one of actually he did, he did
like the great, like the great dictator wasn't
delivered funny. The greatest speech ever given on
yeah the
on
great screen. Dictator
yeah.
speech.
Okay, yeah. No, I could see that.
What type of genre would you play with him? Like a real serious kind of like thing?
No. I just think like dark. Similar to what we do, you know, which is somewhat serious, somewhat comedy things. I think he has such an incredible way of seeing the world, you know, the way he would come up with, like, you know, his slapstick type stuff was a type of comedy that was never done, you know, before that that time, like, and I think if you put him in a, you know, a sandbox type, you know, Dungeons and Dragons thing, he could come up with some incredible ways to deal with, like, the situations and, you know, to make some great scenarios there. And when it came down to the role play, he could just boom out with these speeches, you know.
I mean,
big time. I was about to say Buster Keaton as well. Yeah, Trey.
Who's Buster?
Just
Keaton?
Doing at the table stunts.
Like, oh yeah, that guy. Like, very he's unreal.
We had Buster Keaton and Charlie Chaplin.
Okay, no. Would you not say LARP with those two? Then that would be amazing.
Yeah, I'd say LARPing with them would be brilliant. Can I give another answer as well?
Give as many answers as you want, birthday boy.
I think a much more expected and a bit of a cop-out answer, but I think Brando Sando would run an incredible campaign.
He was my he's going to be my second basic
world
bitch
building
choice.
Yeah, like as a bitch choice, Brando Sando would just give you a solid game of D&D. I think a solid campaign, like, you know, you'd get really fun encounters with physics and stuff built in. I'd say,
do you reckon he would be that good at D&D because he's so good at planning everything out and everything kind of slotting together so well that random chaos aspect of players might throw him if he's not used to it?
I don't think so. I think from his style of writing, he'd be able to, because he's got a very rapid, like, American modern style of writing. I think he'd be able to pivot quick enough. Like, you know?
Right. I think he would.
It's not like he has to translate it into high fantasy.
Yeah,
you have 30 sessions of role play and one session of a big battle.
And that would be the best damn battle of D&D you'd ever played in your life.
Even just like weird little mechanics and stuff. Like, I'm trying to do a little bit of it in the Wizard of Wild space with like the gravity bubbles around the ships and stuff. I'm trying to get a little bit of a Sanderson thing going on there. And I just think, like, introducing fun little quirky magic things or physics systems and stuff, he'd be really good at doing that. And I think it'd be great and fun.
Caitlin says Patrick Rothfuss as a suggestion because he plays.
Oh, yeah, he plays
Acquisitions
Pierre.
Incorporated.
Acquisitions Incorporated, yeah.
The series that got me and Jim into D&D.
Yeah, it's the first D&D we ever listened to. It also inspired my entire playstyle of D&D with his love for chandeliers. Or chandaliers, as we call them in the business.
I would love to DM a game of Whispering Ashes for the lore director of Magic the Gathering, just so I could traumatize them for how they butchered Magic the Gathering over the past year.
Okay, this is getting into conversation.
Now we're just talking about our interests.
This conversation needs some deodorant.
This stopped being content a long time ago.
No, now we're getting into the great parts of it.
No, this is just Ryan has an audience and a mic, and he's like, finally,
we ruined it. We used to have something great.
Fucking Nicole Bolas back every 2 minutes. Phyrexians or Eldrazi, whatever they're called.
See, Dredd appreciates that it's a revenge table.
Yeah.
I'd like to have purely on like her voice, I'd like to have the narrator from Baldur's Gate as a DM.
Oh yeah.
Just for like, you know, how good she is at that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, let's get actual voice actors instead of us.
Yeah.
Be great.
Yeah. No. Just
no replace, people will see
replace all good. Of us with better people.
You know what you guys should watch? Critical Role.
Why are you at our Twitch stream?
Yes. Okay, I think that's kind of like basically all the that's the kind of the crux of the questions. There's random other ones. What are Storms you up to, and will you ever see a side adventure romance with the sexy wind dragon thing? Listen and find out. that's my cop-out answer. Yeah. Sorry. There's one last one. Would you guys ever consider having a guest GM on the stream and or pod so that all three of us could play together?
The asking holy for a trifecta. Friend.
This was just Caitlin's question as a thinly veiled attempt to GM for us.
We've actually talked about it a few times, and yeah. I suppose a very technical answer with it is that when you build like something, you know, like what we have, like you've kind of got an IP that, you know, you want to stick to. And we spend so long like wanting to do that. I suppose we've always liked the idea of it, but there's a lot of risk involved as far as IP, as our IP, which is a lot less when we have guest players, but a guest GM, it's much higher risk. You know, does that make sense?
I think there's a few people we trust with it. Like, yeah, you know?
Yeah, I wouldn't let a randomer off the street come in and do it.
No. But you know what I mean? Like, it's like, yeah, I don't mean like a randomer. I just mean,
I think there's, I don't see it happening anytime soon for the podcast. Purely because four of us can't fit in Ryan's room there. Like, that's, yeah. Where Ryan is sitting is where we record. You physically can't fit another human being in there.
We've thought about it
around the table.
Decided logistically and just the laws of physics say this won't.
I don't think it'll be 2024, but 2025 is probably when this wall is going to become a cable barrier, and the bedroom behind me is going to be turned into an actual recording area. Where I can put a big table in there, and then this will actually just be the production room, where we can still do ours, but then, you know, the rest of it will be in there. But I don't think that will happen. Maybe by the end of 2024. But
otherwise, I think I'm totally up for a guest GM. Yeah. It would be on stream. I definitely think for aforementioned space reasons. But I mean,
just let us get our feet wet in the stream, and then we'll.
Like, yeah, I think that. the great thing about streaming is that we get to start interacting a lot more with other content creators, other GMs, other players and stuff. And like, what's been great about doing the Wizard of Wild Space is, you know, getting to play with Caitlin and Apollo and Harker and kind of like, you know, yeah. getting kind of different things at the table. I think when we stream, it's always going to be at least two of us on it. So it is like kind of like still hard fire and not just someone else kind of. I wouldn't want to see it like Dimension 20, where it kind of just becomes we're a general kind of show and things happen. I think Hearthfire is always going to be the three of us in some configuration. So I think having us be part of it would be kind of key. But I would love, like, have we ever played the three of us together?
No, I don't think so.
Like, see, which Dylan,
it's never happened. It's always been one of us.
Yeah. Yeah. Dylan, you're the hearth, Jim's the fire, and I'm the tail.
That's it, the podcast.
I'm the tail.
You know what? If you didn't describe me as the fire, I would hate that, but you described me as the fire, so I love it. I'm down.
You know, with that, two things, Ryan, get fucked.
Look, hey, Becca did that that Hearthfire Tales for
yeah,
us.
Yeah, I know.
That was great.
That was great.
Oh, and can I do a quick little plug of a thing we're doing just while we have a week before the next Wizards?
Sure. Yeah. Kind of any final messages, speak now or forever hold your peace. Or
very quickly, social media. We are doing a meme competition for the Wizard of Wild space. Best meme based on episode one gets an NPC named after them in episode two, ad infinitum until the end of the campaign. So go watch it. Deliver unto me your best meme, and I'll name an NPC after you in episode two.
Nice.
Speaking of competitions, we don't have any details just yet, but we are planning an incredibly large giveaway. Honestly, it's ridiculous. But there is going to be I won't say details are to be determined, but we are going to be giving away a lot of dice, like not just a few, an absurd amount of dice.
And not cheap dice.
Good dice.
Really good dice.
We're not going to say anything more. You can probably guess who it's from because we've got a long-standing relationship with them. But stay tuned for that. It's going to be wild. And speaking of wild, it'll probably be run as part of our Wizard of Wild space. Did you like that one, Jim? That was for you.
I did. I loved it. Thank you.
streams. this will go up in the next couple of days once I get a chance to kind of just edit it together and show it up. Next week, 8 o'clock, Jim will have a game ready for us with the Wizard of Wild space, continuing on with that great story. We've kind of met all our characters now, and we've had a storm. And gonna see how that goes.
And then the boat's fucked.
And then on Sunday, the 26th of November, we have Midwinter Tale happening, is super cool, super fun. And we'll kind of start sharing teasers and sneak peeks.
It's going to hit the social media now in the next week or two.
So. Yeah. Keep your eyes peeled for that. Thanks so much for people in Twitch chat for interacting and stuff. That was great. And thank you to everyone who's given us questions and submitted questions to us over on our Patreon, social media, and Discord, all that kind of stuff. Speaking of Patreon, check out our Patreon, patreon.com/HearthfireTales.
It's X-rated.
It is X-rated. You still have a chance to get a load of exclusive merch and things like that if you hurry and subscribe this month. And until then, stay dangerous.
Stay dangerous. Bye.
Stay scared. Bye.